Shut up and sit down.
Problem Reaction Solution Network. I am Nate.
And I am Jim.
Today we have Michael Shanklin. Mike Shanklin. Mike, how are you doing?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great, man. Do you prefer Mike or Michael?
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
I'm making it easy on everyone. So go for whatever you feel fancy that day.
Okay. Awesome. Sounds good. Great. We're here today, Problem Reaction Solution Network. Jim and I just created this a couple months ago, and we're kind of the amateurs just getting into it here. We follow the philosophy of the non-aggression principle and the non-status mentality, you know, and the non-status quo of our modern day. And we found you on Facebook, and we're interested because you're a Minnesotan. We're from Minnesota, and you recently moved to Rochester, Minnesota. You're maybe an hour away from us or so, 45 minutes away from us, but... How did you get into Minnesota? What brought you here?
Well, you know me, I just love tundra. No, but seriously, I've been all over the world. I was born and raised originally in San Antonio, Texas, and moved all over the world. You know, I've been in California, Kansas City for a majority of my life, North Carolina. I was in Europe a few times, in Switzerland, all over the place. But I got transferred up here for a job. So loving what I do, working for this energy company. And just to let you guys know, for all the viewers out there, I usually go around littering these bumper stickers. So I'm going to give away some to Jim and Nate's viewership here today. We'll give away three prizes so you guys can have these bumper stickers. Peaceful people do not belong in cages, and our love, volunteerism bumper stickers. So free, literally, you don't have to do anything. Just leave a comment saying you want in, and Nate and them will choose it. But yeah, I'm so far enjoying Minnesota. There's actually quite a few good people here that I really like. The people at my job, I like a huge majority of them, and just wish it wasn't so cold. You
know? Right, right.
You get used to that one.
You know, we got some of the coldest winters in the world, and we got some of the nicest and hottest summers in the world as well. It's an interesting place to be in. One day this past, well, I guess, I don't know, the end of the last month here, we had one day that was 59, then the next day it's snowing, and the whole, you know, it's 30-something, and it's just insane. In the summer, it's definitely well worth it. Definitely well worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's get down to it. So, like, tell us about yourself, and, like, how and when did you get involved in the Liberty Movement?
Yeah, so originally when I was younger, high school, et cetera, I was actually a Democrat, believe it or not. Not really because of the economic issues, but more the social side. So I didn't want to government really involved in marriage, or if they were going to be in marriage, I wanted it kind of just be equal to everybody, whoever wants to marry whoever, whatever. I was very, you know, anti-war on drugs, maybe not against some of the harder ones back in the day. But the whole idea that – you know, you're going to have a system running around imprisoning people to make their lives better. Just something didn't click right in my head, even when I was a kid. Right.
Right.
Some other issues, though, I was never anti-gun. So it wasn't one of those extreme leftists that are, you know, on social issues like, you know, the cookie cutter type liberal ideals. But I was definitely towards the more free side of the liberal agenda. Now, as I grew up, I started to understand economic freedom more and more. Even in some of my later high school years, I started to realize, you know, hey, what's this FICA on my paycheck? They didn't do anything. Why are they getting my money? And really, when we look back on it nowadays, it's given me a much lower interest rate than what I could get out in a money market scenario, et cetera, whatever I want to do with my money if I want to invest in gold. You know, they take my money and give me a measly little 1.2% interest rate on my treasury. So, you know, to me, Social Security and all that started to really hit home as I was making paychecks, which I made paychecks earlier, but as I made more money, it started to take more money out of my paycheck. But then it wasn't just a self-centered, I am selfish and want to keep my money type perspective, which really there's nothing wrong with wanting to keep your own money. I started to think, well, where's the limit? You know, if we took this reductio ad absurdum to its extreme illogical conclusion, we realize that they can take everything, and if they deem it good, then it's good. But I don't think of that as good. So where is this in the sand, right? And, you know, I started to understand more and more that economic freedom, the more I got into economics, that economic freedom and us escaping the Malthusian trap of eras past and us having an industrial revolution and this property right, this proprietarian-based society or closer to proprietarian-based society is what allowed individuals to flourish, allowed them to have families that could send their kids to school where they could save money and invest into their own causes and creeds and businesses, et cetera. And that really started to drive home for me was the economic side, where economic freedom is actually what brings about prosperity in this world. And the centralization of power, the central planning of economics is what brings about so much poverty in the world. When we look around us, the regions that have the most central planning today, aka the less property rights, these are mostly the African regions, some of the Southeast Asian regions, very, very, very poor, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, very low on the index of economic freedom, yet they have poverty out the wazoo. Well, isn't that what all the politicians tell us is the opposite, right? Well, I started to realize that economic freedom is really the driving factor for prosperity and peace. That coupled with a civil libertarian perspective, civil liberties, where you control your own life, where nobody else should be able to just tackle and cage you for a victimless crime, et cetera, that started to really root into me. So I started to find libertarian policies, and this is Ron Paul's first run, 2007. I can remember him coming out, and I was very biased. I was actually more on the more freedom side at this point, due to the Libertarian Party principles I'd found earlier in 2003 and 2004. But when Ron Paul came out in 2006 and 2007, I was one of the first people in that movement. Me and James Cox back in the day, a really good friend of mine, and we jumped into the campaign thinking, well, you know, this is obviously much better than any of the systems and candidates we've had previous. And so we really started to heavily support libertarian type ideals and philosophies and candidates in general. We were endorsing almost anybody who put liberty next to their name at that point, right? Obviously, we were very anti-neoconservative, was one of the tinges of the Republican Party, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I've only grown from there since, right? And people think, well, that's the end point in many of their eyes. Oh, I've reached the end point, and that's finally it. The reality is the rabbit hole goes much deeper. And so I started to understand self-ownership at its very base principle. Now, whether we want to argue a deontological perspective, which is for those who don't know, let me just kind of explain deontology versus consequentialism. The deontological perspective is rooted in the ideal that chain slavery is wrong. I think that's one of the best examples of hypothetical scenarios I can give, where I go around and ask people, do you believe that people should be in chains and enslaved to others? And if you say no to that, well, then you have a preference, a moral preference towards believing that you can actually quantify or objectify a moral stance, right? That's more the deontological perspective. Well, I was definitely biased towards that really heavily. And I was obviously already on the consequentialist side. For those who don't know, consequentialism being the state of which you believe the consequences are determined. In other words, you don't have to worry about the means as much as what's the ends. So if we have to kill 10 people, but we can save 100, that would be good. Well, freedom in its base, whether you want to believe property rights from deontological perspective, you have the right to own yourself, or just the fact that a proprietarian society, whether you believe in natural rights rooted in the individual or not, breeds a more peaceful and prosperous society. It's a consequentialist argument. Both of them started to really click with me and hammer at its very base. So that's why some people argue deontology versus consequentialism. I am both, right? I don't think you have to choose a dichotomy in this. So I was really heavily rooted in both aspects. And at this point, the rest of the fallacies just started to become apparent, right? The idea that we are trapped to a social contract and that we have to be enslaved to everybody else. That democracy is good at its base, when really it's nothing more than majority tyranny. The whole concept of rulership at its very base, right, from a deontological perspective. So not only did I feel that I had the statistical analysis available and readily handy to me to point out all the prosperity that can be built from a proprietarian society, but I found that could be rooted deontologically through normative and ethics-based system. You know, we could go into praxeology and all that, but that might be a little bit too deep for our first show here. The ideal, though, that we own ourselves and that nobody has the right to own or control another person, and vis-a-vis off that there are no crimes in society. Everything that the state says is a crime it might be a crime. Murder is a crime. State says that, and I agree with that, right? You shouldn't murder somebody else, although they murder plenty of people. It's called democide. But the very fact that aside from the government murdering people, there are other crimes that aren't crimes. So in other words, the state says smoking marijuana is a crime. Well, anybody who's researched this topic in depth knows that you're only, you know, harming your own body, even if you want to label it as harm. Once again, value subjective. But the whole concept that if you don't harm somebody else, there can't be a crime, right? That started to really root, and this is where FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Association brochures and stuff like that, I became a heavy proponent and still am of the Fully Informed Jury Association, which goes around and educates jurors on their jury rights inside of statism, whether the rules are stacked up against us. We, as individuals in this society, might be chosen to rule on a action of the people, the peers around us, and we have to, with a good conscience, knowing that we are free and we should be living in a free society, we must strike down any law that does not have an actual harm of property rights or body to another person. So, you know, this whole philosophy has been a long journey.
Right. So you'd be, on that note real quick, I'm just curious, with what you just said about the jurors and stuff and having them more informed, you'd be... you'd be for getting rid of the mandatory minimums, right? That's kind of one of those things. There's a couple of those hidden things in there that say that the jurors can't know certain things about maybe that the mandatory minimum might be this or that. Or you follow what I'm saying? Is that one?
Oh,
of
yeah,
the,
definitely. Well,
yeah. Go
oh,
ahead.
Yeah. Well, as an individual libertarian, as an anarcho-capitalist, any type of mandatory minimum sentencing, it's by especially by the state. It's not proportional to the crime, right? So, in other words, if I go out and I step on your flowers, that doesn't mean you can just shoot me, right? No libertarian society would justify that, right? Sure, you made a mistake, especially if it's non-intentional. I would just, you know, have to apologize. I mean, we could go to private arbitration if it came to that.
Right. But
you and I both entered into an arbitrator. The state doesn't have to be the final arbiter. And this is what a lot of people have been fooled into.
Exactly.
Thinking that the state is the final arbiter. And there, without a final arbiter, we'd have chaos and what the people historically have thought of as anarchy and chaos, et cetera. The reality is we would actually have a lot less waste inside of the justice system had we had a system that's based around people choosing their own arbiters. Imagine, you know, and this is, I think, a very important point. There's a child custody attorney or a judge who, mind you, they're still statist, but they asked a family, this husband and wife who had split up and they were going through a custody battle, and he asked them, you know, don't you think this is such an important decision for your life that you shouldn't have anybody inside of this state make this ruling for you? Don't you think you can come to an agreement like adults? And this is what I think sometimes people have over, you know, this overcast comes over us of what a free society is supposed to be, how we're supposed to actually live our lives. And it's tainted by the state, right?
Right.
Minimum mandatory sentencing does not make us a prosperous society. All it does is distort law even farther, right? It only distorts justice. So it's not proportional, only proportional restitution and rehabilitation should be the goal of a voluntary society, making the victim whole again and making sure everybody's okay. That's not what the state does today. So the state today is injustice. And I think about this too. If I was a criminal in today's society, I would actually be very thankful that we have statism, because it makes my job much easier. Not only has law just been distorted and justice been distorted to where some theft is legalized, to where some initiation of violence is viewed as good, it distorts our whole ethical system from where we're raised. We're born into an environment in which we say some initiation of violence is justified. And of course, this is going to thwart most people's minds. Not only that, the court system and the police system are so inefficient today, and they're chasing around all these victimless crimes. What is it? You know, 40% to 50% of people in prisons right now never actually did a violent criminal act against somebody else. They're there for drugs, prostitution. I mean, there's a long laundry list of victimless crime, sadly. But what this does is it takes resources that we could be using towards the murderers and rapists and thieves, et cetera. And it's taking money away from those actual causes that we do want to chase. Not only that, it's a violent monopoly. So whether we want to talk about how it's funded through a taxation system, indebting grandchildren that aren't even born and open their eyes for the first time, or just inflation on other people through the Federal Reserve and Central Bank creating more money out of thin air, that obviously is wrong too. But the whole ideal that we're having this central monopoly of protection over us, something if the government can't even produce a freaking hand sandwich efficiently, let alone the mayonnaise that goes on the ham sandwich? Why give it something so much more important of production as the rules of society? It's absolutely ludicrous. This is the hypocrisy of the minarchist position,
right?
Which I used to subscribe to long ago.
Right.
So, yeah, obviously, you know, like you're saying, anytime the court comes out with this is the best way to handle justice, I'm very skeptical.
Yep. No, I 100% agree. And it's, you know, I think in our modern age of information, we are getting to the point where a lot of people are starting to understand that there's a lot better solutions to handle these disputes and minor disputes than courts and at least the government monopoly court system, you know. I'm going to go on to two questions here. First one, have you read The Market for Liberty? And then what is your role? What do you consider your role in the liberty movement?
Well, you know, first of all, yes, The Market for Liberty is one of my favorite books, actually. It's yep. I even host it at voluntaryvirtues.com, so you guys can go there and get the download. Not only the book and every chapter broken up into a PDF format, but also the audio book, which was so graciously created. And I want to thank the Tannehills for all their great work over the years. You know, now the question is, what's your role in the liberty movement? Some people believe, you know, that it's defined so rigidly, you have five different roles and you have to fulfill one of these. My thing is, do what you think you're best at, you know, and obviously for me, I think I have some linguistic abilities. I'm not the best out there.
Verbally agile.
Oh, verbally agile. I like that. But I definitely attempt to bring it to an audience that might, you know, most voluntarists I found, they can be very abrupt and very straightforward with their message. And it's important to do that. I don't want to take away from that abruptness and that seriousness and that straightforwardness that we do need to hear. But sometimes the crowds that we reach are people who, there's a lot of people who are very snubberish. They stick their nose up to almost anything. And they feel like they're more analytical and they're more educationally based than some other people. You know, that's why I kind of went and got 3 degrees with honors and scholarships to take those people head on.
Sure.
Well, you anarchists hanging out in your mom's basement, blah, 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 right? Actually, I'm a very well read individual. I've got, you know, whether you like degrees or school or not, thank goodness I went to a private institution, so it wasn't nearly as heavily biased towards Keynesianism, et cetera.
Right.
But I can now, with those credentials, take on some of the other, what I would call liberal elites, et cetera, that think that they're so high powered. Whereas some of the other people are very, you know, we have some people in the voluntarist movement that's, and I love the diversity that we have. There are some people that wear dreadlocks and smoke pot all day. And hey, man, go attack that group that you hang out with. I'll get the intellectuals over here, right? And the people in business and stuff that are hanging on to this Republican cliff. So my whole thing is, you know, I don't think pushing it on others is the right thing. I like creating a resource center. This is why I built up websites and podcasts and videos, et cetera.
Sure.
Trying to hang on this and letting people through, you know, inbound marketing, coming through search engine optimization, allowing that to boost us up. And it's created millions of hits for me over the years, thank goodness. And I think it has made a huge splash. But that's really the angle I try to attack, is the producing content, making it readily available for others on the internet, allowing them to click a simple link and they can go and learn this 30-minute, you know, interview or narration video or something like that, to that effect, and trying to hammer away on the intellectual side. But we need people all over the spectrum over here, right? So right. I don't want to say my way is the one way and you have to do everything I do. Some people don't even document their children, like Alma Somers. She's the one who leads the Jackalope Festival down in Arizona here. She's very off the grid type. You know, I'd like to make it a voluntary grid. She doesn't think that's possible. You know, so we have different ideals, and that's the beauty once again of liberty, is the diversity of ideas. As long as we have our base being around a voluntary society, I'd just like to see that being the built what we build around.
Network cut out for just a second. What'd you say that woman's name was with the undocumented kid?
Yeah, Alma Somers.
Okay, is she one of the people? Is she one of the people down with Adam Kokesh volunteering down in Arizona?
Yeah, I think she is.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
She definitely likes. You know, Adam Kokesh has done great work over the years. You know, we might be we might be skeptical on his new book because we don't think it'll open eyes to, especially Daniel Rothschild and I. He's right now at George Mason getting his doctorate in economics. He's one of my really, really good friends. And, you know, him and I, we really like Adam Kokesh. The book, we might have been a little harsh on the review of it. Obviously, the aim and the goal were great. Whether the writings will help convince non-libertarians to come over, that's the question we ask.
Yep.
That we're not sure about. But the rest of his work, oh my gosh, eye-opening experiences all around. Everywhere you go with this guy, he's very consistent with his message. Maybe a little conspiratorial for my taste on some issues, but he doesn't hammer on that. Very based around the non-aggression principle. And I think he hammers both sides, deontological and the consequentialist, which I think is important to hammer both sides because we don't want to come across as some religious people. And we also don't want to justify everything by the ends, right? So I think there's the truth somewhere lies in the middle.
Sure. Yeah. On that note, real quick, Jim's going to get on to the next question. But on that note, I'm kind of on the same page as Adam Kokesh. That's one of the things I'm a little bit on the conspiracy side. That's one of the things that woke me up before getting into the understanding of economics and how economics is everything with the way to a free society. And I agree. I'm glad, you know, he doesn't go into the conspiracy thing like some people do, and I'm not like that. I'm not the flat earther. I'm not any of these kind of really out there conspiracies, but my, you know, called a conspiracy or not, my main argument would be not even an argument, but just my main thought process is the fact that I don't believe with the situation we have today, whether it's poverty or anything all over the world, wars and everything else, the Keynesian economic status quo, you know, just this ridiculous conservative liberal mentality that is consuming everything is, I don't believe it is ignorance. I believe it's intentional. Call it conspiracy or not, you know, some people, you can argue on many different areas, but I think it's on a larger scale, it's intentional more than it is ignorance of incompetence of leaders and so on, you know. I don't know. What's your take on that real quick?
Well, I think it's a mixture. I think there are some people out there who are really just stupid and don't realize that socialism enslaves people.
Right.
And I also think there's a bunch of people that are lobbyists that just suck us dry, and they know it, and they know they're doing harm, and they're just going to do whatever they can to feed their families.
Sure.
So I think the whole thing, the whole spectrum is kind of right, you know?
Right.
You have the idiot feminist liberals. I think they really believe in their stupidity, right? You know, the feminazis is what I like to call them. And I'm actually a true a traditional feminist. I want equal property rights for all people and all races and all that stuff, right? So I think I'm the true feminist on that issue. I think the ones today are extremists.
Right.
They're the ones who initiate violence for their ways, et cetera. They're anti-equality, even though they act like that's their mantra. So, but yeah, I think some people are really, really good-hearted and just do stupid things. And I think some people are very corrupt-hearted and use the system to gain for themselves, and they know so. So what the mixture is, I can't read minds, right? Isn't Minority Report. So right. I can't really say exactly which is which. I do think that Cheney made lots of money during the Iraq War. Okay. And I think that's documented pretty well.
Sure.
Now, did they actually also believe in getting Saddam Hussein? I think they did. I think that they didn't want him as a dictator. I think they really believe in this neoliberal kind of democracy is freedom type BS mantra. I think they really actually believe in the American democracy that George mm-hmm. Washington set up for us, even though they're clueless on history and economics and the rest of it.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's a mixture with most people. I don't think that most people – I do want to say this. I think most people in the world mean to do well. I think not everyone. I would say a majority, 51% to much higher. I think most of the people in my life that I'm around, my friends, my family, my coworkers, my neighbors, the people around me that I talk to, interact with on a daily basis, I think most of them mean well, and they're just clueless towards the reality of the political spectrum. So that would be my rooted belief.
Sure. Sure. Yep. It's kind of that, I don't remember what the law is, the name of the law, but it's that 80-20 perspective, 80-20 law, everything in life can be broken down to 80% of people are good, 20% of people are bad, 80% of that 20% are bad, but not as bad as that next 20% down, and you kind of keep breaking it down in that. I wish I could remember the name of the law. It's a law that the guy that termed it. Anyway, Jim, let's go on to your next question here.
Well, first of all, how much time you think you got with us? Because that's going to determine what I ask you next here.
I'll hang around for keep going. Okay. We're fine. Well, I'll cool. give you another.
Well,
30 minutes.
So going back to the what's your role in the Liberty Movement? Are you the only person working on Voluntary Virtues Network, or is that kind of a group venture? Or tell us a little bit more about that website.
There's actually two different ones out. There's voluntaryvirtues.com, and then there's Voluntary Virtues Network.
Okay.
And the network is where I aggregated dozens and dozens and dozens, literally almost 100 voluntarists and anarcho-capitalists to do podcasts, video podcasts, all that kind of stuff from the network channel. And then voluntaryvirtues.com is really just my thing, where you'll see me doing my videos where I stand there and talk for 10 minutes usually. A lot of the interviews depends. I kind of want to disperse them. You know, really the organization on that could go another step. Obviously, it's not what I do to make my money. Mm-hmm. So it has to be secondary in my life, sadly. Very fun hobby, but it's definitely it could use a little more organization. I would say Voluntary Virtues Network is definitely where you will find 100 different people out there talking on a variety of different things. And Voluntary Virtues is really the original Route One. That's the one I created, and then the network came years later down the road.
Okay, cool.
Very cool.
Cool.
So you're interviewing all these guys, Walter Block, Jeffrey Tucker. How did you get in touch with these guys? How did you just email them? Do you know people that know people, or do you have a great agent, or what do you got going on here?
Well, I've spoke with all of them at Porkfest. I was flown to Vancouver to speak with Dr. Block. I was his headline speaker. And so I spoke right before his big speech at this big event. I've spoken with them in Anarchy in NYC, all over the place. You know what I'm saying? So I've in Atlanta. Now Walter Block and Tucker weren't there, but I have a really good connection with these guys going back years and years and years. Before there were millions of anarchists all over the internet, we were very alone. And it was much easier to get in touch with somebody than it was. You know, but before our friends list were filled up with 5,000 plus people, we had the 500 friends list, 10 years ago, right? So it started off really small, and there weren't too many anarcho-capitalists back in the day. And it's just been in this explosion over the years. It's unreal, really, how people have come from all over the political spectrum to find liberty. And so
I'm still seeing it. Still seeing it right now on a daily basis. Different people waking up every single day, and you always hear. I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube, and I follow a lot of different guys, and you always hear people saying that. But it is very true. There's every single day, new people are coming to this idea of anarchy, but not the chaos, garbage can through windows, looting anarchy, but the anarchy of non-aggression principle and leave me the hell alone, which is the quintessential American ideal values. One of the things this country was founded on was leave me the hell alone.
Right. It's so funny. Everybody wants freedom, but most people don't know what it is, right? Or really hate it once you actually give it to them. It's really ironic when you think about it that, they'll cheer on the founding fathers fighting up against some tyrannical government. But we have a tyrannical government just a few hundred feet away, a few hundred miles away from me and us. And people still wave that flag, still thinking that that flag means freedom, when really it's just been co-opted by a bunch of statists and socialists and fascists, right? So this is the irony of it. But yes, you're right. There's more and more people awakening every day, and it's become this butterfly effect where it's just has grown exponentially. And it's really good to see, because I still get messages to this day almost every day saying, I remember fighting with you 4 years ago and think you were some crazy idiot, Mike Shanklin, and here I am today. an anarcho-capitalist, and I want to say thanks for all your hard work, you know, beating me over the head with logic and stuff like that. I literally get these emails still, and it, you know, it makes me even want to go do it more. You know, every time right. I get one of those, I'm like, damn it, I need to go make a new video right now. You know, yeah. I'll go address X, Y, and Z topic just because I think that's something they haven't heard of. But yeah, every day more and more people are waking up. So we definitely have reason for optimism.
Yeah, I agree with excellent. That.
That segues perfectly into the next question. Where do you see the Liberty Movement going in the next 10 to 20 years? Since you've been around probably 10 years now, you know, us just a few years basically. But, you know, where do you see it going in the next 10, 20 years?
Yeah, you know, some people say, well, what's the strategy? You know, are we going to attack one of the governments and take it over with libertarian principles or something like that? That's what the Libertarian Party and some of the anarchists are trying to do through the LP. I think that's kind of a futile attempt. I think we're going to have to find a place that really doesn't have a lot of government. You know, I think Galt's Gulch was a pretty good idea in the fact that, you know, it might have been in a Chile, the country, the region of Chile, but it was kind of out in the sticks, far away. The problem with that is you don't have the infrastructure created there. I think you're going to have to create a new society and make it free from the base. And you're going to get people fighting you. You're going to get people moving in that aren't libertarian. You're going to have those problems, but that's one of the best things we have. I think it's going to take much larger numbers, right? We're going to have to get 100 million of us, and then we actually can do something like a free state project, but built around actual anarcho-capitalism versus a minarchist alliance, right? I think we really need to get a lot of purists together in this sense. And find a new place for liberty. I just don't know where that's going to be. I don't know how it's going to come about. You know, I think it's going to take a long time before we get there. Probably at the end of our lives, we'll see something like this happen.
Sure, that was our next question right there. Our next question, you just answered it. So that was it right there. The question was, do you see it happening in our lifetime? And I kind of agree. Probably at the end of our lifetime. What are you, 35 right now? I'm 31. Jim, what are you, 35?
34.
34. Are you 35, 34, Mike? 35?
34.
Okay. Yeah, that's...
twins, Jim.
Oh, what's that?
Good. I was joking. I said, we might even be twins. Go ahead.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so that was a question, you know, is it going to happen in our lifetime? I kind of agree with that. I have a brain fart now. I had a whole bunch of questions or kind of different comments on what you just said, but at the end of our lifetime, you think it's something that, like you said, 100 million people, maybe. I agree. It's going to have to be big numbers. It's going to have to be bigger than the 60s. I mean, the protests and the numbers that are put together nowadays compared to the 60s are weak. You know, you had in the 60s, the protests and the gatherings going on, you had a 250,000 people, 500,000 people, 1,000,000 people getting together. You know, those are huge numbers. Nowadays, those numbers aren't like they used to be. To really have a change and a real movement to actually happen, you're going to have huge numbers. And maybe with how tyrannical the situation is today in the USSA, we're going to have like you say, 100 million. And that's a real huge number. We're going to have something like that, I think, to have a true free state come together. That's right. One of the things that I want to say is what you're just talking about is basically what Mark Victor was saying at Anarcho Capital or Anarcho Poco. I'm sorry. Did you see any of the videos from? I guess there's not a whole lot right now out on from this past year of Anarcho Poco. But did you see the Mark J. Victor video by chance?
I didn't see that one. I saw some other videos from Anarcho Poco.
Okay, yeah, you should check that one. I'll go to Mark J. You know Mark J. Victor, the attorney for freedom. Mm-hmm. Right.
I've heard of him.
Yep. Check out his. He needs more subscribers on YouTube. I really like him. He's anarcho-capitalist all the way, and his speech from this year at Anarcho Poco, it's about 45 minutes long. You can find it on Mark J. Victor's YouTube channel, and it is extremely, extremely cool. He points out everything what you just said. You know, we gotta win the hearts and minds of people. Just because we're libertarians or anarcho-capitalists or non-aggressionists doesn't mean we have to agree on everything. It doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything, but to get to that not only that free society that we want sooner than later. But to get to those big numbers, we have to win the hearts and minds of people and get people to understand it's all right if we disagree. That's totally fine. It's all right if you're a socialist, as long as at your base you understand anarcho-capitalism and mainly the non-aggression principle. If you want to be an anarcho-capitalist socialist, that's fine. Just practice the principle of non-aggression and property rights. And, you know, it doesn't matter. It's all about winning the hearts and minds of people.
Well, yeah. First of all, it's generational. So as I hate to say it this way, I love my family, my grandparents, a lot of the older people in my life. But as you get older, it's a reality that we get stuck in our ways.
Yep.
And that a lot of the people who are awake to anarcho-capitalism happen to be the younger crew, have looked back on the baby boomers and all the other generations in the past and said, you guys are just banging your head against a wall. And I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I'm not going to go bang my head against bricks, right? This is silly.
Right.
And so I think that's one thing that is going to have to happen, is it's a generational shift. And as the years go by, the people with the outdated ideals will just go away. And the new ideals, and this is what happened with chain slavery too, right? As people outgrew chain slavery. You know, the governments are always 20, 40, 50 years behind the people and the thought process of the time. So, you know, these people are just way behind. And it's just going to take a long time for this to come about. I had another point and I forgot what I was going to hammer on. So if I think about it, I'll come back to it, but feel free to go to the next question.
Sure. Jim, what do you got for him?
Well, we actually got to the end of the list here.
We were talking about anarcho-communism and anarcho-capitalism. I actually have a very good video. If you type in anarcho-communism, planned chaos on YouTube, you'll find my video. Lots of hits, and other people have reposted all over the internet. So at this point, it's kind of had the Streisand effect. Even if I wanted to hide it, there's no way I ever could, right? But it really hammers away on the ideal that an anarcho-capitalist society will allow for a mutualist society. They'll allow for communism.
Right.
You can have your own commune and you can come together. You don't have to have property rights if you don't want in that commune. So anarcho-capitalism is actually very tolerant of most other ideologies, but the reverse is not true. You could not have capitalism inside of anarcho-communism. You might be killed for it, honestly.
Right.
So this is the beauty of anarcho-capitalism, is it enables people to have whatever type of society that they want. It just says, you know, abide by the non-aggression principle. So I think it's important to point out that you can have almost any type of communist or socialist behaviors inside of a capitalist society, but it doesn't go the other way. So that's why capitalism should trump from a moral perspective.
Right. Yeah. I 100% agree. Moral, philosophical moral perspective, and on the philosophical economic perspective, you know. Again, everything is economics. My mic just cut out there. Everything is economics, and I even look at everything being economics in coming to morals and ethics. You know, I mean, let's try to grow as free, beautiful individuals with knowledge, and grow our brains, exercise our brains, and to do that with living by true morals and real good morals and ethics, and is to understand how to prioritize them, right, and really use them to your best advantage with on an economical speaking basis. You know, I'm kind of rambling on, but Jim, what do you got? You got a question for him?
No, I got to the end of my questions.
Okay. All right. Right on.
You know, let's not take up too much of your time here, but just wrapping up here, why don't you plug your YouTube channel and your webpage and Facebook and all that. I know you had a couple great interviews here over the last couple weeks, and then you have a few scheduled too.
Yeah, right. So we just had Jeff Kerr on last weekend. Yesterday, I had Dr. Walter Block, a great economist of the anarcho-capitalist blend. On Tuesday, I have the presidential candidate for an anarcho-capitalist presidential candidate. His name is Daryl Perry. He'll be on the Voluntary Virtues Zero Con YouTube handle. So head over to Voluntary Virtues Zero Con on YouTube. Just type that in. You should be able to find my channel really easily. And on the week after that, I have legal expert Mark Stevens. He'll be on the show. And then I have Jeffrey Tucker. I'll have Jeffrey Tucker and Walter Block on once a month moving forward. But all of these are hosted. All of the events on Facebook can be hosted and found on Statism is Slavery. Just like, you know, chain slavery is a thing, and some people like to call debt slavery if you're enslaved to governments for that's debt slavery. I think that I believe that statism is political enslavement. So we're enslaved to a rulership, political rulership, and that's the beauty of anarcho-capitalism. It would get rid of that forced hierarchical system. So I truly believe that statism at its base is a form of enslavement. So head over to Statism and Slavery. We have almost 200,000 subscribers and wow. growing. So thanks to everyone over there who's helped us grow. Yeah. And you can always find the events over there, the times, the whole calendar, etc. And also voluntaryvirtues.com. I really haven't done too much work on the websites. You know, I just put them out on YouTube and hope that they grow from there. And most people take it and run with it and make them viral that way. But you know, definitely voluntaryvirtues.com. And then we also have a side thing where we do a lot of people who just write, a lot of authors, for freedom, and that's politicalcure.com. You also find that Facebook page, thousands and thousands of subscribers on that as well. So we have about 40 authors for freedom, and then Voluntary Virtues Network is where the video vodcasts are from. So we have about 100 different anarcho-capitalists that do videos over there, and you guys are always more than welcome to rebroadcast your show over there as well, because this is just exactly the kind of quality of content that we want. So
sure, cool.
So yeah, I think that pretty much summarizes all the plugs I need to get out.
Okay. What's up with Minnesota here? Are we the only three anarcho-capitalists in Minnesota? Or are we? I know plenty of conservatives. I grew up conservative myself, and just until the last, like, I gotta admit, like, last 6 months is when I've came to this whole idea. And you know, one of the guys that really turned me on to it before anybody else was Jeff Berwick, and he's very forward, and that's it. At first it was uncomfortable when I first started going down the rabbit hole, because it's like, you know, the first time I heard him say he's an anarchist is like, all right, I'm gonna find something else to watch or listen to here. Because but it you know, after understanding, you know, I followed Adam Kokesh before long before anything, before I ever knew he was an actual anarcho-capitalist. And I mean, mainly I didn't follow him a lot, but I watched a few of his videos, and after coming to understanding him, Stefan Molyneux, and listening to a lot of stuff from Anarchast with Jeff Berwick, it's really opened up my mind, and it's the only thing that makes sense. You know, I'm not the smartest guy out there, but it's pretty easy to understand basic economics. It's pretty easy to understand how it affects and can affect everything in life, and it's really all that matters to solving a lot of our issues, and not all that matters. Again, we got to change the hearts and minds of people, but it's just really interesting now looking back on the conservative state of mind and even the liberal state of mind, and it's just I wish I could debate a liberal and a conservative on a daily basis. It would just be so much fun, even if I never get any respect or win any of the debates. I mean, I don't think it would be hard to win. I mean, how much do you have with interviews? Do you have liberals or conservatives on where you go back and forth and you guys just don't agree on anything? Or
oh yeah, I've had a variety of people on my show. I've done shows with Zeitgeistians, okay. Venus Project type people.
Yep.
I've done shows with extreme socialist anarcho-communists. I've done shows with, you know, Republican minarchists. I've done shows with everybody over the years. And, you know, I really do think that it's good to address other philosophies and ideologies, because you're going to reach a new base that you'll never touch otherwise, right? These people don't even know to Google anarcho-capitalism, or they think that capitalism means, like, you know, politicians being lobbied by, you know, by lobbyists and stuff. Capitalism is, right? So, I think it's good to reach out to those. I still like these kinds of shows, though, because we can actually hammer on the principles of freedom. We can talk about No Victim, No Crime, where I can go a little bit more in depth here than I would on a Venus Project show, even though that might be something. You know, I always try to talk to the crowd I'm talking to. So,
sure.
You know, so if I'm talking to a bunch of conservatives, I'm going to hammer away on freedom, because a lot of them still believe that property rights. And then take everything from there. And this is why the war is bad. This is why the Patriot Act's bad. This is, you know, take it from their principles that they already, you know, recognize and adhere to. And the same thing with the leftists. Oh, you want to end the war on drugs? Well, then property rights is your only solution, because the lack of property rights is what creates the theft, which and subjugation, which allows them to fund this DEA system, et cetera, et cetera. You know, if you really want to have equality for gays, then you got to get government out of marriage totally and respect property rights so they can't steal to discriminate against gays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think it's important to not only reach out across the aisles to these other philosophies, but to speak from the direction they come from, relate with them, say, hey, we understand and we actually agree with a lot of your end goals. The means is where we disagree with. And sure. We believe that it can be achieved through violence and the initiation of violence where you do. And that's what's actually creating more of the problem, right? Poverty is not created by free markets. It's been created by a lack of free markets, a lack of people to have to increase quality of the products around them and to lower prices, right? People usually forget the third party in this, consumers. So, you know, this whole thing goes into that play, is trying to talk to the audience that's around you, or that you're, you know, that you've been invited to speak on, and just try to hammer away on the points for them. And I'll tell you, it's really hard because you got to know so much history. You know, so some people will come at you and their whole thing is Glass-Steagall Act of, you know, in 2000 or 1997, it was repealed and blah. And they think that's the root of it. So you have to go down this rabbit hole and find out the root fallacy for them. And I still think the Socratic method is one of the best ways. So just asking inquisitive questions of them, being respectful of their mindset, yep. And just trying to corner them philosophically and intellectually with, well, if you believe that the war on drugs is bad, why would you continue to fund it through taxation? And knowing that every other statist system in society and humanity has done this throughout all of history, what makes it so much different for your society? And then they'll realize over time, hopefully they ask themselves the questions. We got to get, you know, the battle is not really external. I mean, it is to us because we've already the reason it's external to us is because we've already handled it on the internal part. It's all inside of our own heads, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's fighting their own, the battlegrounds is inside of everybody's own mind. And so we have to spur that battle so that they have a chance. We have to equip them with the swords and with the shields and with the mojo juice that they need to drink so that they can beat that demon inside of them. And that's, I think, the root cause of this. And that's what I try to do through a Socratic method.
Right on. Right on. Well, we're gonna call it right here. We're going to call it. We'd very much like to have you back and do another show with you. Maybe even, you know, usually most of our shows I think we have on YouTube and Podomatic right now are mm-hmm. an hour to hour and a half to 2 hours. So we're coming up close to an hour here, so that's not bad. Next time we do one, maybe we'll find a day where we can do an hour or two and really get into a whole bunch of stuff and whatever. You know, if we just do a half hour or two, that's fine. But we'd definitely like to have you back.
Sure, of course, guys. You know, I'd love to co-host with you as a guest co-host at times. So
yeah.
We could all three sit together, maybe have another guest on and drill them. So whatever, we'll definitely talk off air.
Sure. Cool.
Thank you very much for coming on. This has been Problem Reaction Solution Network. I'm Jim.
I'm Nate.
Practice freedom, encrypt your phone, and grow a garden.
And be excellent to each other. Thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.